have pierced ears or even a pierced nose or belly button? How about a tattoo? How about an implant of some sort under your skin or a decorative scar? Why do people turn to what some call body art and others call extreme body modification? We will talk about the trend this hour and why it's back in the news. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 4th. Body modification got some attention in the media recently after it surfaced that Arkansas had attempted to pass legislation to ban what some call extreme forms of body modification, like scarring of the skin and implanting objects underneath. Why do people do this, and why are some concerned? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We welcome your thoughts and your reactions to this trend. If you have never seen body modifications beyond a tattoo or a pierced ear, you can check out the slides of some extreme body modifications from CBS News that we posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. He teaches a graduate class called Body Rhetoric. John Jordan is a communications professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, first of all, you say extreme is a relative term. Are there subcultures in which dermal implants, for example, are not considered extreme?
Normally, they would be considered extreme, but I think when we talk about any group, they get to set their own standards and definitions as to what is extreme and what is not. So within certain subcultures, we may see, for instance, the subculture of those that perform body art on each other, professional groups. If you were to go, for instance, to a convention where there are examples of body art, you would see everyone having body art, and that in and of itself would not be extreme. It would be more extreme for someone not to have a dermal implant or to demonstrate some of their art and technique on themselves. So it does kind of matter where you're looking from in order to understand what exactly would be considered extreme or not.
Yeah, but I'm guessing that the people listening right now probably don't see this every day?
I would imagine that most of us don't see it every day, and that is why it strikes our attention and also why then someone might consider it something that they would want to intervene in.
Yeah. So do we have any idea how many people do this?
It's very rare. And that is something that was brought up in most of the discussions, is that this is a practice that does not have as many adherents as, say, getting one's ears pierced or getting what we consider a normal ink tattoo. And so it is a very small portion of the population that seeks out and then actually has something like a dermal implant.
Well, before we talk about why people would do this or consider doing this, let's talk a little bit about what modifications are we most likely to consider extreme. What exactly is a dermal implant?
A dermal implant runs in two basic ways. There are the kinds of implants where something protrudes from the skin, and so there is kind of an anchor that rests underneath the skin and has to be implanted, and then it has something that sticks beyond the skin, and it's decorative. We're not talking about medically assisted devices. We're talking about things that people want on their skin and protruding from their skin because it has, to them, a pleasing cosmetic effect. And then there are the other type, which are implants that are entirely beneath the skin. And the idea there is that it's kind of like a mold that someone puts underneath the skin so that when the skin heals back over, there is a decorative display. It could be a particular pattern, or it could be a shape, and it looks as though it is underneath the skin. The skin stretches across the implant and creates a visual effect.
Yeah. For example, when I was looking at some of the photographs on body modifications, I saw an implant on, it looked to be a woman's ring finger, and it was a gem of some sort that was implanted on the skin. It wasn't completely under the skin because you could see the diamond or whatever the gem was. So that was, you know, to me that was like, oh, well, that's kind of pretty. But then I also saw what is called a bagel head. And that was the shape, some sort of object, I don't know if it's metal or what, was put on someone's forehead, and then the skin grew over this this object, and it looked like a bagel was on someone's forehead.
Yeah, they do tend to run towards the extreme because we're not used to seeing any kind of protrusion. In fact, for most of us, the idea of seeing someone who has something protruding from their skin, if it's not a gem, if it's something like you're talking about with the subdermal implant, we see that almost as a sign that the person may be in trouble, that they have some sort of injury or that, you know, they at some point previously in their life experienced a trauma, and that is the effect of it. We don't typically think, I believe, in terms of, oh, I'm looking at someone's artistic expression through that. And that's one of the biggest hurdles, is that we don't have a typical baseline response when we see something like that in terms of art.
Yeah. And then another another modification is called scarification. Talk a little bit about what scarification is.
Scarification is likened to tattooing, except it's using some method, be it cutting or sometimes it's a chemical method, such as freezing the skin, in order to let the skin then heal itself by producing a scar. So it's inducing the body's response to a particular kind of injury or skin trauma to then produce a scar. If done carefully, one can manage how the scar is shaped and therefore what pattern emerges as a result of the scar. And so it's kind of teasing out an image or something artistic using the body's own natural scarring process, but it's permanent for the most part, and in many ways it also is something that raises a certain amount of controversy.
Yeah. Well, why? Why does it raise controversy?
Because it is a kind of managed injury. So, again, we're dealing with the different scales of what kinds of extremes we're looking at, but in the way that, for instance, if you have your ears pierced, that also is a managed injury. You're introducing a kind of trauma into the skin so that then you can produce a hole through which you can stick a decoration. But we don't usually think of it that way. We think of it just in terms of, oh, one's getting their ears pierced. Scars have a different sensibility within our culture. We, again, think of them largely in terms of sympathy or trauma, that something bad must have happened such that then this person has a scar. And we tend to think of it in terms of, oh, one is scarred for life. We don't think of it usually in terms of they've produced something artistic. And the means by which the scarification has to be achieved are the kinds of things that raise some people's suspicions, because it is about cutting into the body or freezing parts of the body using other implements to produce the scar, and that raises a few eyebrows.
Yeah. Well, it raised some eyebrows in Arkansas, apparently. Earlier this year, we saw on social media sites, especially a bunch of stories being shared about Arkansas attempting to pass legislation to ban extreme body modification, like scarring of the skin or implanting the objects underneath it. But it turns out that it didn't necessarily, this wasn't an effort to ban necessarily. Talk a little bit about that. It turned out it was, there were some safety concerns.
That was the initial reasoning behind the bill. And the very first version of the draft, according to the reports, say that it was very poorly written, very poorly conceived. It was based mostly on the idea of the authors of the bill were seeing something that they didn't particularly care for, and then we're using their position within the legislature to try to ban it. The ultimate version of the bill that was passed became much more about protecting the ability of people who want to engage in body art to do so from a licensed body artist rather than trying to ban particular types of body art, although the subdermal implants were banned, but those are already covered by a federal regulation because they're considered to be an invasive form of surgery. So it began in one way of arguments being made that people with scarification, people who are engaging in other acts of body art, things like, as we're talking about, the kinds of implants as well as tongue splitting, these types of things, that those practices should be banned. And the reason was that whoever is getting those practices done on them is likely doing so at a place where it's likely that they would get some sort of infection, that they are experimenting with their body in a way that would be unhealthy from a medical point of view, although no evidence was actually produced that one is more likely to get an infection from those types of procedures and body art practices than anything else. So it became kind of a rallying cry for those who are against body modification to say, yes, we do need to ban this, and then for everyone else to step up and say, well, why is the government trying to interfere in people's bodies, and they don't have the evidence for this? So it's very interesting to see that all one has to do is mention that they're thinking of banning certain types of body art practices, and people come running from all sides to share their point of view. It was a lightning rod in a way that I'm not sure that the people in Arkansas imagined it would be, and the way in which the story went national as well.
Right, yeah. So just to clarify, what ultimately happened is that scarification is okay in Arkansas as long as it's done by a licensed practitioner, and the rest of some of these other forms of body modification are illegal because they're too dangerous?
The specific ban in the final version of the bill deals with the subdermal implants. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, for instance, the example that you mentioned of someone with a bagel head. That is something that a licensed body artist in Arkansas would not be able to do. If someone wanted to do that, they would have to be able to convince a plastic surgeon to allow them to have that, because plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, that done by a medical doctor in a clinic was not covered by this bill. This bill was only about licensed body artists, so tattoo artists, those that engage in scarification. Scarification initially was proposed as being banned, but it became a quagmire. It was difficult to differentiate that between practices that are like scarification, such as branding. But Arkansas had already ruled that branding was okay because it is a practice that has been going on within the state with their knowledge for some time. And so it again demonstrated that it's difficult to make the kind of fine distinctions one would need to about bodies, about art, about what people do to them in order to pass reasonable legislation. There still is some concern that the language of the bill is still far too vague, and that it may allow in other iterations people to ban the type of cosmetic practices that supposedly now are okay within the bill. That's something I'm sure that they'll have to deal with as they try to implement the bill and as practices continue. But there was quite the reversal. It began as a bill that was looking to ban many different types of body art, and it ended up as a ban on only the subdermal implants, and everything else it wanted to regulate. And so the body artists themselves are celebrating the bill in many ways, saying this will make things safer. Those legitimate body art shops that are engaging in these practices, offering them to customers, now have more legitimacy because their license means more. And they hope that it leads to safer practices and customers that are more savvy about how they choose to go about having their bodies altered if they choose to do so.
We will talk about why some people want to have their bodies altered. Talk about these body modifications, whether you call them extreme or not, and welcome your thoughts and questions on body modifications. And wonder if you have a tattoo, and is that any different than a scar? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you think these choices express, and do you approve or not of the trend? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Body modification got some attention from the media last month after it surfaced that Arkansas had attempted to pass legislation banning some extreme kinds, like the scarring of the skin and implanting objects underneath the skin. So we are talking about these forms of body art or body modification with a professor. And welcoming your thoughts and your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also see some photographs of body modification on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. John Jordan is our guest, communications professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He teaches a graduate class called Body Rhetoric. And Professor Jordan, why do people do this?
It's a very interesting question, of course, and I think there's as many different reasons why people modify their bodies for artistic purposes as there are modifications. If one were to ask every person who has a tattoo, why did you get a tattoo, I think we might hear very different reasons. But I think the common point is that the body is ours. It is the only possession that we have throughout the entirety of our lives, and I think that we do learn that point very early on. Many things that we have can be taken away from us, and many things that we encounter we may not have full control over. We may not be able to decorate our living spaces in the way that we want. Our car may not look the way that we want it to. But we know that our body is something that we have control over and that we are supposed to decorate in a way that expresses something about ourselves and that creates a reaction in other people. Now, that goes in many different ways. Some people apply makeup. Some people have piercings, but they're the kind of piercings that don't really draw that much attention. Others go to more extremes. And I think it is rooted in this idea that we learn very early on, and the lesson is continually reinforced throughout our lives, that our bodies communicate in a way that nothing else in our lives does. And therefore, we start to get creative about how can we help our body communicate something even more. Now, the flip side of that is also that our bodies communicate sometimes permanently. The modifications that we do aren't always easy to erase. It's not just like taking on and off an outfit and changing it out to you know, wear something different. And so we have an issue of short-term versus long-term thinking, but also hopes and aspirations related to bodies that nothing else within our world has. And so we're in unique territory when we talk about body modification.
Anne on Facebook says, I think that some of this expression is a plea for emotional help. People that have to cover their whole bodies have a need that only this is fulfilling. It is also reinforcing to young people that the human body, just as it is born, is not good enough. Your thoughts on that?
It is a common point that we hear, and it reinforces the idea that when we decorate our bodies, it's not merely our intention that goes out into the public, it's other people's reaction, how our bodies are seen. And like any act of communication, we can't control that. There's what we intended with what we are saying or what our body art looks like, and then how people respond to it. But I think there is another point that was made that is quite good, which is to say that as a society, we very rarely consider the natural body to be good enough. Almost any form of cosmetics that we have is an attempt to try to refashion our bodies. We don't, for instance, all of us don't let our hair just grow and grow and grow. We get it cut, which is in some ways an unnatural attempt to reshape our body. If we just let it grow, if we just let our fingernails grow, if we just let the body do its thing, in other words, we would likely end up with bodies that historically we have said we're not exactly thrilled by. And so we do everything from what might be considered very conservative measures, merely trimming your nails, getting your hair cut, doing other things such as, you know, bathing, using perfumes, any sort of scent that then allows our body to communicate something other than it would if we just let it go in its natural state. We work out. We regulate what we eat in order to try to shape our bodies so that they look a certain way, so that we present a certain physique. And that maybe is on just what we would consider to be the normal end of the spectrum. At the extreme end, of course, we engage in cosmetic surgery, we engage in dermal implants, we use inks to permanently modify the way in which our skin looks, and we spend a lot of time, and even just thinking about during the course of a day, we spend a lot of time attending to our body and the way in which we modify it so that it communicates effectively. So where we land on the spectrum may vary, but I think each and every one of us is on the body modification spectrum in some way.
John in Marshall is with us. Hello, John.
Good morning, Joy. How are you this morning?
Very, very well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. I really appreciate your guest's last comments. For me, body modification was something, although there were more personal reasons, I guess, it was almost an experiment to see how others would perceive me differently. I actually, I'm began modifying my body. I guess we've all, like he said, are on the body modification spectrum. But for me, piercings and that sort of stuff began in college about 12 years ago now. And after my first year of college, I realized that folks were perceiving me in a way that I did not like. And I started to explore ways to change that perception. I have Asperger's, mild form, and as a result, there are distinct social challenges for me. And I was very amazed at how some simple piercings to my ears changed the perception of people around me, people that knew me well.
Yeah, because we're almost, John, excuse me, I'm sorry, because we have a news break coming up, people perceived you in a better way, a more positive way, you thought, because of the piercings or not?
Yes and no. Overall, I'd say that more folks that knew me were positive about it, but people that did not know me were less willing to get to know me.
Ah, yeah. So do you still have the piercings?
I do. They're larger now, and I still have other things I would like to do, but there's only so far you can go before people like employers start to shy away.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that story. We're going to check news, and then we'll get a response. Why do people modify their bodies? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, September 4th. We are talking about body modification and what some call extreme body modification trends during this hour. Body modification trends such as scarification or subdermal implants. Why do people get those? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking about why some people want to modify their bodies, what they are saying with this body art, and why some are concerned. Our conversation is prompted in part by the state of Arkansas earlier this year attempting to ban extreme forms of body modification. Our guest is John Jordan, communications professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He teaches a graduate class called Body Rhetoric. Just before news time, we heard from John in Marshall, and he said that about 12 years ago, he began to have his body pierced, and he got a number of body piercings. He says he did it as a social experiment to see how people would react, how people would perceive him. And he says he got mixed reaction, positive reaction from his friends and some of the people that he knew, but negative reactions from others in the community, including employers. I'm wondering, Professor Jordan, your thoughts on John's experiment.
Well, it was a very interesting comment, and I'm glad that he shared it with us. It also strikes me as being somewhat familiar in terms of how people begin with body modification, which is sort of starting out with one or two almost experimental attempts at seeing what their body would be like, and then as they get reactions and are comfortable with those reactions, they move in different directions. We see this in cosmetic surgery. We see this even with tattoos, where someone maybe will begin with a small tattoo, and then as they start to get to appreciate the idea, move into more extreme forms, larger tattoos, more tattoos, any of those types of things. So we tend to want to experiment with our bodies and test reactions and see how things go. But then it does tend to prompt us to do more or to experiment even further. The other part of that, of course, is the experiment isn't just ours to control. There's public reaction. And as the caller mentioned, that could be something in terms of how potential employers start to look at us. Has not necessarily anything to do with our ability to perform the job, but with our physical presence and what our physical presence represents within the workplace. And that can perhaps create additional difficulties. It can create additional difficulties when one is just merely in public, walking down the street, and people see how one looks and have different reactions to it. Those reactions could be positive. You see someone, you say, oh, you know, they look like I do. They're also into body modification, or the negative. You see someone and you say, oh, they're into body modification. I'm going to just keep walking. It's sort of a grand social experiment, but one that does have consequences.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about the tattoo, for example. It used to be that, it was almost all negative. If somebody got a tattoo, people thought, oh, that's awful. But our attitudes have changed over the years. While it's maybe not universally accepted, having a tattoo now is really no big shocking deal, is it?
No, it doesn't seem to raise eyebrows like it used to. I think you're absolutely correct, Joy, in that it was at one point a mark, and often considered to be a negative mark within our culture. Other cultures have used tattoos in a much more celebrated way, to mark rites of passage, to mark positive events that have taken place in one's life. For us, the coding was a little bit different. But now we see so many tattoos and of different varieties that it's very difficult to maintain the typical and previous attitude that, oh, this is a character that I need to be wary of. For example, I happened to be at the Harley-Davidson events over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed those very much. And what I saw were people that had numerous tattoos, other forms of body art and modification, and there was nothing negative about how they were looking at each other, how they were using those tattoos as signs of belonging to that in-group, being part of a culture. And every once in a while, I think we may come across a tattoo. Probably the most famous example that we may be thinking of is when Mike Tyson got his facial tattoo, that we say, okay, that maybe is a bit far.
Mm-hmm.
Many celebrities now have tattoos. Many people like the idea of getting a tattoo as one of their first body modifications and signs that they are using their body in an artistic format. And so we've seen a great cultural transformation in a relatively brief amount of time that has led to perhaps the door opening for other forms of body modification and people wanting to see if that goes in a similar direction.
Yeah. Do you see the day that scarification, for example, is going to be more accepted or not as shocking as it is today?
Perhaps. It still is very rare, and I think with tattoos, it aligns more with the idea of painting, looking at the body as a canvas, and even our metaphors and our language go in a more positive direction. Right? We see it as a much more artistic expression. The word scar, of course, is difficult for us to get over the negative connotations and the idea that somehow this is an art form that is beginning in harm and then moving to someone else. And those that are dealing with scarification who use it as a body modification practice, their language demonstrates that they are trying to get over the obstacle as well, to talk about it in terms of permanence and beauty, and trying to help people understand that this is something that the body can produce in terms of art. But I think it's an uphill struggle at this point. We still, I think, overall as a society, look at the idea of a scar in a negative light. So when we're talking about body art, it depends on the language that we use as it connects to the types of attitudes that it generally provokes. And so I think if there is going to be a time when scarification becomes mainstream, it'll be farther down in the future, and it'll require more than just people seeking it out and wondering about it.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call from Brian in Madison. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What I wanted to point out was that I think what people find acceptable is dependent upon their career choice that they're in, or not just their peer group. For example, there's a man that's not too far away from me. He's a mayor of a town, and he wears his hat backwards and has both of his ears pierced. Not 20 years ago, not a typical mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's more acceptable. The guy that might be performing your brain surgery, you may, if he had body art or body modifications, the doctor that's speaking to you, you may not have as much respect for him, so to speak. But if it's the guy that showed up to fix your computer, you'd probably think this guy probably knows what he's doing, because it just seems like it's each area seems like it accepts different looks, different body modifications, things like that. But one thing that I would worry about if my children wanted to do any type of body modification, and I'm I have both ears pierced. I have some tattoos. Your peer group when you're in your 20s or your teens has a tendency to change by the time that you are in your 30s or your 40s. And that would be my biggest fear for my children, is that they would do something at a young age that maybe couldn't be changed. For example, the ear gauges that create the big holes, things like that, that maybe 5 years down the road they can't really do much with.
Yeah.
As opposed to some tattoos can be covered up, things like that.
Really, so good points, Brian. Thank you very much. So, Professor Jordan, your thoughts on that? Our peer group when we're in our teens and 20s is going to change.
Oh, absolutely. And so will our bodies, although some of the modifications, as the caller mentioned, will stay with us. And that's kind of the double-edged sword, is to say one of the reasons why we decorate our bodies the way in which we do is so that they will be permanent. You know, a tattoo will be there, and it says something about our own attitude and mindset, to say, I made this choice to have this ink on me for as long as I can. We even maintain our tattoos. The other side of that, though, is that a body modification that maybe was a good idea when we were part of one social group or when we were at a specific age later on may not seem like such a good idea, and it's not just something that you can wash off with some strong soap. It's something a bit more permanent. And so it puts us on a trajectory, and I think the caller was accurate in terms of mentioning that, which is that the choice that we make and the way in which we choose to exhibit our bodies then continue to speak for us as we go down whatever road our life takes us, but it may push us down certain roads rather than others. Some embrace that. That to them is the reason why they wanted their body modified, is so that they could continue throughout the course of their life, have a body that continues to identify them in a way that they want. Others may come to regret the decision and then have to seek out usually other body modifications, such as reconstructive surgery, in order to try to deal with the choice that they made perhaps even decades ago.
Yeah, I thought he made a good point when it comes to our perceptions and the career that the person is in. I had a skydiving instructor, yes, I actually jumped out of an airplane once, who had a lot of piercings and body modifications. He had that big hole in his ear for, I'm not sure what that's called, but I didn't think twice. I didn't bat an eyelash really at that. But if I, you know, was seeing a doctor and my doctor looked like that, I might.
Exactly. And I think it's sort of amazing how often we tend to think of the example of a doctor in that role. And I think we do so because when we're talking about the relationship that we have with our physician, we're talking mostly about one of the most trust-based relationships. And there's other relationships where that trust factor isn't entirely dependent upon all the factors such as how the person looks. You know, whether it be your skydiving instructor, computer technician, something along those lines, a barista at a coffee shop, we're saying, well, if the coffee is good, if the computer is fixed, if I don't, you know, if the parachute opens, then I'm going to consider this successful. But when we talk about other roles, if we talk about, for instance, the doctor, if we talk about, for instance, a religious official in whom we were trying to confide, then physical appearance seems to be one of the first things that we consider in the basis of trust. And it does this person to me look trustworthy? Now, we may want someone. For instance, if I was going in to have a tattoo removed or something like that, maybe I would feel more comfort if I saw that my physician had a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe have more experience and they have a closer understanding of knowledge of what I'm seeking, as opposed to someone who maybe has never experienced that. So it matters. It matters deeply to us. The first basis of that trust relationship often is the way in which we communicate to each other through our physical appearance, and we have high expectations of what that is, even if the expectation is it doesn't really matter, or, as we've both been saying, body modifications may communicate an increase in trust to us because we identify that person as belonging to a subgroup that we think should have the skills necessary. But it's always there, that part of us looking at each other's bodies and taking into full consideration what these modifications say or what the lack of modifications say is always a part of our attitude.
We are talking about body modifications. Would you ever get a decorative scar or an implant under your skin. How about piercing your tongue or stretching your earlobes or a tattoo on your face? Why do people get these sorts of body modifications, and why are some people concerned? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Jordan, communications professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who teaches a course on body rhetoric. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes before 7 on this Wednesday, September 4th. We are talking about body modifications this hour and welcoming your thoughts and maybe your concerns. And our next caller is Danny in Peshtigo. Hello, Danny.
Hello, Joy. I thought I'd let you know, like, there's some people that get tattoos and stuff for medical reasons. There's a story I read about a year back where a woman was allergic to UV light, and she'd get big blisters on her skin, so she always had to be covered up with clothing and stuff. And then I guess the story goes where she just got a tattoo and found out where the tattoo was. She wasn't having an allergic reaction. So then she had her whole body tattooed, and she hasn't had to wear so much clothing or put the UV stuff on anymore.
Well, that's interesting, but I bet you that's pretty rare too, Professor Jordan.
Oh, yes, would be quite rare, although there hasn't really been an entire wealth of studies related to what are the medical and perhaps positive medical effects of things like tattoos. But I would agree that that is probably a more rare reason why someone would get a tattoo. But it is good information to have.
Yeah. Brian in Cuba City has another, medically related tattoo. Hi, Brian.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Brian. What is your tattoo for?
I'm a type 1 diabetic since age 44. Now I'm 52, and I got a medical alert tattoo with the universal medical sign on it with the red, and it just says type 1 diabetic. I'm not one for wearing necklaces or a bracelet, and so I thought, you know, a tattoo would be there forever, and I don't have to worry about it.
Is that the only tattoo you have, Brian?
That's the only one I'll ever have.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I guess we know what Brian is trying to say with that tattoo, Professor Jordan.
Well, it is. And I think the idea as well of how we use the permanence of something like a tattoo to our advantage. It's just a different type of communication. Hopefully it provides him with peace of mind, knowing that he doesn't have to rely on a piece of jewelry or a tag or an ID card, something that may get lost or left behind somewhere. It can provide a sense of safety and security, and I think that's often why people look at their body in terms of modifications, is to say, the natural body that I have, what can be done with it, to it, to provide me with something more, something that would provide me with something other than what it's providing just now. And we see the whole spectrum, whether it be an artistic representation. Some people have the names of their children tattooed on their body, and so it's a permanent reminder for them. It gives them pleasure when they see it. Others have medical reasons for why they may need to modify their bodies, particularly with tattoos. And so, again, at the root of it, we see the way in which we're conceptualizing the body, modifications to it, and how we can make that communicative.
Yeah. John from La Crosse emails, tattoos can date code you like the expiration on a package of hamburger. All right, John. He says, just be aware of that. A unicorn? That's the late 70s. Just saw a black power tattoo on an older woman that was from the 60s. So I guess saying that that you can be dated if you choose a trendy tattoo?
I suppose so. And maybe that is something that someone wants, is, you know, fashion fades away, but a tattoo doesn't. Maybe it's a person's way of being able to keep alive whatever it was that they were feeling when they got the tattoo, a way of holding on to something that culture has kind of put in the archive. And the flip side, of course, is we see with everything, there's always going to be a flip side to it, is that what may have been the highly fashionable tattoo, a statement that brought a lot of positive attention, now gets looked at differently, you know, as a relic that one can't get rid of. So all these modifications, though, are prompts. They confront us with the way in which we understand art, permanence, change, and everything that's involved with them. They create an occasion for us to have these types of conversations and to wonder about them, when without the tattoos, it would be a different conversation. Without body modification practices, I think it would be a very different type of consideration, particularly those that we consider extreme.
Yeah. Well, you know, this makes me think about, I don't have a tattoo. I don't have any piercings. In fact, I think I'm one of the few women my age that I don't have pierced ears. My mother told me when I was, I don't know, 15 and I wanted to do this, that no, she said, you can wait until you're 18 if you want to mutilate yourself. And I never, ever got my ears pierced or had any tattoos or any body modifications whatsoever. However, I do, you know, I wear makeup and I do get my hair cut. So what's going on with someone like me and someone who is going to pierce their tongue, for example?
Well, I think you would find yourselves able to have a conversation, although you'd be coming at it from different sides, obviously. What's interesting, I think, is that in your example, even if you do not have body modification, you think of yourselves in terms of body modification, right? I do not have pierced.
Yeah.
The others who do. And so it's something that we recognize as a consideration of what is the standard body set, if you will. And we, in all of our minds, we have kind of a checklist of, you know, given the person's age, their gender, their occupation, social status, what kind of modifications do we expect? What kind of personal grooming do we expect? And whether one adheres to that or not, that's the standards that we apply when looking at someone and considering them. The same scale applies to someone who has a pierced tongue or has gone even farther, say, for instance, has split their tongue. They exist within the same scale and recognition. They just exist on a different part of it. But I think it's that awareness that people are looking at our bodies and expecting them to appear a certain way. And whether or not we've gone to extreme modification or whether we've done no modification to our bodies, I think at a very early age, we come to that understanding, and it's taught to us. It's taught that people are going to look at us and that we should maintain a certain physical appearance, and that we judge people by their physical appearance, including their modifications. How many shows are there where people are judged based upon whether or not they've had cosmetic surgeries and whether or not those surgeries are good, what kind of fashion sense someone exhibits? This idea that we are to be judged by our physical appearance, I think, affects us all, and we can all find our place on the spectrum based upon it.
Thank you very much, Professor Jordan. We're out of time. John Jordan, communications professor at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network.